Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
It is the Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Glad you're with us today. Greg Kosilt, he normally joins us on Wednesdays at 12:20, but he was filming NFL matchup yesterday. So he's nice enough to join us today as we take a look at the NFL draft. We always start Titans and look big picture, of course, but it's always great this time of year to catch up with the very best at analyzing the film. Greg, how are you?
Jonathan, what's happening? I appreciate it. I was up in at ESPN yesterday, so thank you for adjusting today, this week.
Absolutely. Well, so we're 1 week away from the draft. From your evaluations and critiques, who's been your favorite player to this point, the elite among the elite, as you've watched tape?
Well, favorite player and theoretically best player are two different questions for me, because there are some guys I watch that I don't know much about, and I watch them, and I really, really like them. God, I'm so deep into this. I'm trying to think that through right now, because I'm just trying to grind through and get to, you know, to different guys. Oh boy, God, I wish, you know who I actually had not watched a lot of, and I actually did him this weekend. I had done some of him last year, was Nick Chubb. And I was really kind of impressed with him. And I'm anxious to see where he goes and how he's viewed, because I think that he can be a feature back in this league and a very good one.
Greg Kosilt with us on the Midday 180. Looking at some potential Titans targets with you today, and sure. First or second round, depending on which mock drafts you're looking at. Let's start at pass rush with Josh Sweat from Florida State. Medical evaluations will be huge for him, but aside from the injuries, when you watched him at the point of attack and rushing off the edge, did you see a player who will transition well to the NFL, and do you see him as a scheme-specific player, or because of his size and athletic traits, would he fit practically any defense?
He was fascinating to watch, Jonathan, for this reason, is there were times where I thought his knee injury actually showed up on tape, where he was dragging his bad leg. And yet, he was still a very effective player, and I wonder what his medical evaluations are and how teams will see him physically, and where he would be then when training camp starts. I think he has the physical traits to line up as an outside linebacker in a 3-4 defense and as an edge rusher in sub-packages. I thought he was greatly handicapped at Florida State lining up in what we call a 4-point stance, where two hands were on the ground. I would have loved to have seen him almost standing up as an edge rusher. His measurables at the combine were off the charts, and I think people are going to look at that and figure that this kid, as his leg continues to get better and better, that his ceiling is very, very high. And he's got really long arms, which everybody likes as a pass rusher. So he's got traits that you get excited about as an edge pass rusher.
He seems like a very strong player. Relies on that ability to pop or jolt the blocker out of rhythm, and that gives him the initial advantage at times. But he's been described by some as a player who needs more time to develop. And I'm sure, number one, that's because if you're looking at him as an outside linebacker, he was not used in coverage very much at Florida State.
And he really was not an outside linebacker. As I said, he lined up predominantly at defensive end with both hands on the ground. But you made a great point. One thing that stood out on tape was he flashed what we call one-arm strength as an edge pass rusher, where he was able to challenge the edge of an offensive tackle, stress the edge, and then lock him out with an inside. He'd lock out his inside arm and shove that offensive tackle back. So he had very strong hands. It was kind of a modified hump move, the way we think of Reggie White. Not that I'm comparing him to Reggie White, but I mean, it was that kind of thing. So, no, he showed that, and he used his hands pretty well. He's a very interesting prospect. It's just that there were times it looked like he was essentially playing on one leg.
For pass rushers who rely on strength and power techniques and have success with it in college, do you sometimes find it to be more of a learning curve once they reach the NFL because of who they'll be facing?
Well, Jonathan, that depends on definition of power, because very often power results from refined hand usage as much as just sheer strength. If you think it just comes from sheer strength, then in your mind there's a little bit of a question, because you say to yourself, hey, are they going to move quality offensive tackles in the NFL? If it comes from refined hand usage, you tend to think that they'll be able to make the transition and translate that ability, because that's a subtle skill set. That's a nuanced skill set that is taught, and that just transcends sheer power.
Just a quick aside, I'm curious about that four-point stance. What's the rationale at Florida State for that?
You know what, PK? I would have no idea, because I don't get it. I was actually watching that with a guy from the Eagles when we watched Josh Sweat, and I did that probably 4 or 5 weeks ago, and we were trying to figure it out. I mean, to me, you know, unless you're lining up inside, and very often he did line up kind of a little more inside offensive tackles. But to me, if you're going to line up outside an offensive tackle and you want to rush the quarterback, I'm sure I'm missing something, because I certainly don't know everything, believe me. But I don't get it, because I think that limits your ability to explode off the football.
Greg Cosell with us. Lorenzo Carter is another player in the same frame with Josh Sweat, but likely more versatile. He did a little bit of everything in Georgia's scheme, including in practice. You can read where he would sometimes line up in their star nickel position.
Yep.
What hesitations do you have about him? Any?
Pass rush. I think he has to be taught how to be a pass rusher. I think at this point he's a really good space player. He's a very athletic kid. He played multiple positions at Georgia. He played on the ball, off the ball, over the slot, man-to-man on the tight end, underneath zone coverage, what we call Joker, where they moved him around in their sub-packages. I think at this point he needs to be taught how to be a pass rusher. He's not an edge pass rusher as we speak today. And if you draft him and think that that's what you're getting as a rookie, I think you'll be disappointed. I think he'll end up being team and scheme specific, because he was asked to do so many things, and you have to decide how you see him in your defense. But as I said, and I can't reiterate this enough, and because people see his body type, and if you haven't watched him on tape, you might think that body type suggests that he's a great pass rusher. That's not what he is.
With you, we only discuss what you see on film, not what has happened off the field with players. When it comes to pass rush abilities, is Arden Key in the same conversation with Bradley Chubb in this draft? Is that a reach?
I think that's a reach. Because I don't get to, you know, sit down with these guys, as you said, so that's hard, because there are times you watch Arden Key and you think that this guy could be special, because he's got length, he's got natural quickness, he can bend, he can explode. Normally that makes a guy a high-level prospect. Certainly as an edge pass rusher, and I think that you could see him as a joker as well, moving him around the defensive front to rush from different spots. There's something missing, and I just don't know what it is. I mean, there's too many red flags. You watch him in 2016, which I did, and you thought he might be a top 10 or top 15 pick. You watch him in 2017, and there was just a bothersome lack of consistent competitive effort that showed up too often, and I don't know where he stands. And I know his weight has fluctuated dramatically over the last year or two, and I think that's a red flag as well.
He is one of those players you have to watch a lot of games on, because he started slow last year but then had a crazy performance against Alabama, for instance. So if you watch him play Bama, you're going to see the very best of Arden Key.
And his very best is a top, you know, if he played that way all the time, Jonathan, he'd be a top 10, top 12 pick in the draft.
Greg Cosell with us.
Another guy who dealt with some leg injuries during the course of his career, wondering where Malik Jefferson fits in for you from Texas.
Yeah, Malik Jefferson he's an interesting guy, because he really looks the part, you know, just body type wise. When you see him on tape, you go, wow, that guy, he really looks like a stacked linebacker. He's got size, he's got natural athleticism. I'd say he's a little stiff. I think he can run fast in a straight line. I think he's a little stiff. Believe it or not, I had this conversation with Coach McGinnis about him, and he used a great word. He said he's not real supple, and I think that's a great word to describe him, a word I didn't think of, but Coach Mack, he knows linebackers a lot better than I do. But, I think he would be at his best in a front scheme in which he's kept clean by the D-line and can play to his athleticism and movement and run and track ability. That's really what he is. He's a guy you want to run and track. Now, more often than not, that kind of player, I think, would be seen more as a 4-3 player as opposed to a 3-4 player, because you're more likely to be kept clean in a 4-3 than a 3-4. So, and I think he really needs to be kept clean. You know, he's got size, he's got traits, but I think you have to be careful. He's a little stiff.
Greg, I want to ask you about some running backs that could be there later in the draft, and I'll start right here in this state.
When you say that, I'm always worried that I haven't seen him.
And if you haven't, just say you haven't, and I'll move on to the next guy. That's completely fine.
All right.
I know you've seen this guy, though, John Kelly at Tennessee.
Yes, I have.
What do you think?
I'll tell you what. I was really – somebody told me about him. I hadn't got to him. I just actually got to him was it last week or this week? Very recently. And I got to tell you, I was actually impressed. I know Tennessee the last couple of years, things have gone downhill and they haven't been very good. But this guy is compactly built. I know the 40 time gets people turned off, but I don't think breakaway speed is one of the traits absolutely required for a back in the NFL. He was so intriguing to me, Chad. At times, he kind of reminded me of a Devonta Freeman-type runner with his body type and his aggressive, physical, relentless running style. He runs with velocity. He runs with surprising power. If you watch, and I don't know if you remember this game, if you watch him this year against Florida, boy, did he look like a big-time back. I was kind of impressed with him, and he's competitive as hell now. He's a finisher.
I'm taking a flyer here that you've seen this guy.
Uh-oh.
Rock Thomas from Jacksonville State.
I have not. Alabama. I'm sorry, I have not.
What about Bo Scarborough from Alabama?
I've seen him, and I try to figure out what he is in the NFL, because the NFL has changed. I think guys who are theoretically built like feature backs but are not high-level talents as feature backs, they end up being committee backs. Because Bo Scarborough is not going to play on third down in your 11 personnel package with three wide receivers. He's not going to play there. There's a ton of backs in this draft who are between 190 and 200 pounds who fit that role very, very well. Scarborough is basically a big back, not a bad runner, but probably not good enough where you're going to start your offense through him. Not probably, he's not. So what's his role in the NFL? He's a committee back. He's a backup.
One of those guys that fits that mold of between 190 and 200 pounds who racked up a ton of yards in college is Justin Jackson at Northwestern.
Yeah.
What do you think about him? A guy who was really productive at the college level.
Yeah, but the problem with him is he was really productive in a feature back way, and he won't be that because he's not big enough. He's built well for his size. The tape shows him to be a consistent, steady, competitive downhill runner, but he kind of lacks the ideal physical traits. Size, as we just discussed, he's not particularly explosive. He was just a very, very efficient college back. I don't think he's big enough or powerful enough to be a volume inside runner. And he's not explosive enough, in my opinion, for his size to work on the perimeter. So, I'm not exactly sure what he is, unless he can develop into a big-time pass receiver.
Going back to the SEC for a guy, Kerryon Johnson from Auburn. Have you had a chance to watch him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen a lot of him.
What do you think?
He's a very patient guy, which makes people think of Le'Veon Bell, but he's not Le'Veon Bell at all in terms of his overall running traits. Johnson struck me as a 4 yards and clouded dust type runner without a real explosive dimension to his game. He's not a game breaking type of runner. He's a sustainer. He's very, very competitive, and you love that. He ran physically. He ran with toughness. He ran with courage inside. He squeezed every inch out of every run. In some ways, guys, he kind of reminded me more of a DeMarco Murray type, a guy who's not a highly, highly skilled traits runner, but he runs hard.
Is Rasheen Green from USC, is he at a 3-4 end?
He's going to be very interesting, PK, because he played. He basically played three technique defensive tackle at USC. I think he was playing out of position. Personally, I don't think he's a defensive tackle. I think ultimately that he's probably a defensive end in the NFL, and I would see him more, to be honest with you, as a 4-3 D end and not a 3-4. He's got a lot of strong athletic movement traits to work with. He's a long guy. He's got long arms. He flashes, but there's something missing right now. He was too easily moved when he played inside. Now, again, as I said, I think he's out of position there. His good plays, he looks like he could be, a Hall of Famer. But they're so few and far between, but yet the traits are there.
Greg Cosell with us on the Midday 180. Beyond Minkah Fitzpatrick and Derwin James, let's take a look at some of the safeties in this draft. Let's start with Justin Reed from Stanford, the younger brother of former 49er yep. Eric Reed. Does he play like his brother first? And
no, he's totally different.
At Stanford, he would play what? Free safety, nickel, up in the box, very versatile.
Yeah, they were thinking, if he came back, of moving him to corner full time. He's that athletic. He ran a 4.4. His measurables are terrific. As you said, he played multiple positions. He's somewhat like Fitzpatrick in that regard. He's not as good an overall player as Fitzpatrick, but he's a more explosive athlete than Fitzpatrick. His issues were eye discipline. You could really see it on tape. His eyes were very often in the wrong place. That's a very coachable thing. It doesn't mean it's fixed immediately, but it's a coachable thing. But I mean, this kid is he's an explosive athlete. Some might see him as at his best as a back-end safety playing single high. I mean, he has great speed and great range.
Jesse Bates from Wake Forest. He only played two seasons, but he looks like a player, Greg, with very good upside, very instinctive. And when I think of instinctive safeties, we discussed at length Kevin Byard a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Does Bates remind you at all of him?
He reminds me more of a true free safety, more like the kid from the Saints, Marcus Williams, who came out of Utah a year ago. I actually like Bates a little more. I think he's a really strong free safety, back-end safety prospect. He's got size. He's got length. He's got very good play speed and range. He's very anticipatory. You're right on the money on that, Jonathan. That's the way he plays. He sees things. He attacks. He needs an NFL weight room. He's a very willing and aggressive run defender. It's just that he throws his body to tackle, so he loses his legs. He needs to get stronger. But I think he's a really smooth, fluid athlete. He's very natural in his movements.
Armani Watts, maybe a little bit later in this draft when it all is said and done. He started a ton of games though at Texas A&M. Plenty of speed. He had 24 career tackles, I think, in the backfield throughout his career. And at times, he had a knack to come away with the turnover. Was he consistent enough for you when you evaluated him?
He struggled as a tackler a bit. He was very good when he was able to attack downhill and line it up, but when he had to sort of square up and get on balance and tackle in space, he had a hard time. But I think overall, if you're talking about the athletic traits, he fits the profile of the multidimensional safety. You can play multiple positions in different packages. I would say he's pretty rangy. There were times he showed explosive traits to his play. I think he ultimately does have the skill set demanded to execute all the responsibilities of a safety in the NFL. I think he can play the back end. I think he can play in the box. I think he can line up over the slot as he did. He can go man-to-man on tight ends. I think it's all there, but I think there's much to learn for him, and we'll see if he's ready as a rookie, but I think he'll be a starting safety in the NFL.
I was reading earlier this week on Dane Cruikshank at Arizona. And
I'm watching him right now, believe it or not.
It's at times he's listed as an H, which I guess is a hybrid safety role for them. I'm only assuming that's what they referred to him as in the defense.
It's fascinating you brought him up. I'm just in my second game of watching him. He's a guy, you know, I'm trying to pick up as many guys as I can in the next week, obviously. He played boundary corner last year in his first year at Arizona. And this year, whatever they call him, they can call him whatever they want, he played kind of a hybrid safety slot corner linebacker role. So the fact that he has experience playing on the outside, even though it's to the boundary, it's still outside, you can see the movement traits clearly. There's a physical component to his game because there are times he literally played outside linebacker. So far from what I've seen, this kid is very multiple in what he can do. He's athletic. He's got good size. And make no mistake, coaches do look at certain particular measurables, and one they look at is the vertical jump, because they look at that as a sign and representation of explosiveness, and his vertical jump was 41 inches. So this kid could end up getting drafted a little higher than people think.
Greg, is there a safety in this class that you've evaluated that could be the third, fourth round? I know you don't rank them like that, but middle of the draft type quality.
Can you throw me some names and I'll see if I saw them?
Well, is there a player like a Byard in this draft?
Well, I thought Byard was a really good prospect, and as you know, he was drafted a lot higher than, I don't think they're the same style of player, but I think Jesse Bates is that guy.
Okay.
I mean, they're not the exact guy, but, Jesse Bates, to me, is once you get him in an NFL weight room, just because the anticipatory instincts and his feel for the game, I think he has a chance to be a really, really good player.
I just keep going back and forth and back and forth on the Titans at wide receiver. Not that I don't think they need help, but that I think they need help that's not young. But the help before them is young. If you're giving them a speed guy who's maybe, again, not one of the top guys in this draft, but knowing LaFleur as you do, I'm looking for the fast guy that gives them at least a little bit of a downfield threat.
There's not there's DJ Chark, and I don't know where he'll get drafted because speed tends to move up in the draft. There's not a ton. I mean, I guess the kid from, is it Kiki Coutre? Is that the kid from Texas Tech? You know, he's a smaller, fast guy that has some explosive traits. There's
4.43.
Yeah, there's not. And wide receivers and corners are the two positions every year where more guys are drafted at those two positions than any other position. And there's no way I can get through all those guys. So I'm sure I'm missing someone. And if I am, please, if somebody wants to tweet me and say, hey, how about this guy, please, I'm okay with that. But of the guys I've seen, and I've seen a bunch, you know, there's not a ton of those 4.35 type guys that I've seen. Chark's one.
One guy we talked about at one point, Deion Cain.
I was just going to mention him again. Yeah, he's very intriguing. I mean, he ran a 4.43, but for his size, that's really, really good.
Yeah, 6'2", 202.
Yeah, and I actually went back and looked at his 2016 tape because I remembered him from last year, and I just wanted to take a peek. And I thought his 2016 tape, if that's all you looked at, I think you'd think more of him than watching him this year, which I thought he was a bit of an enigma. So, you know, he's a fascinating guy.
Greg, when can we see the NFL matchup show?
I'm going to try to... I knew you were going to ask me that, and so of course I'm not prepared for that answer. But it's been all over Twitter, so I'm trying to see when it airs. The show that it was on last night, I know, is on again tonight, I believe, at 10:30 on ESPN2, and then we do a new show next week, and it airs three times.
Greg, that is the proper time for that show. Not at 4:30.
Well, last night it was on prime time. It was beautiful.
There you go.
Oh,
that's,
I got it. I got it. Here we go. Episode 1 is on tonight at 10:30 on ESPN. Okay.
Okay.
And then episode 2 will be on 4:24 at 10:30 p.m. on ESPN2, and 4:25 at 11:30 p.m. on ESPN2.
Right, and you're going Eastern time.
9:30.
We're going Eastern time. I'm sorry. Yeah. I know you guys are. Yeah.
We convert. We're converters.
Okay.
Greg, next week of the draft, we look forward to our conversation then.
We'll be close, guys. We're getting there.
Finally. Finally. Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, all right, guys. Appreciate it.
Yep. Greg Cosell with us weekly, only on Midday 180 here in Nashville.
It's always a whirlwind.
It flies by.
An exhausting whirlwind.
Brings it each and every week.
615-737-1045, our number. He mentioned that Texas Tech wide receiver. That guy put on a show at the East-West All-Star game with some of the moves after the catch. And he mentioned speed rises in the draft. I wonder if that helps him move up around just based on the All-Star game performance in a game where a ton of scouts attend to get a second look on a guy.
Kiki Kuti.
Yeah, that's him.
Should be a name we'll have a blast with. 5'10", 181, 443. So
one more time, that name?
Kiki Kuti. K-E-K-E is the Kiki, conventional. Kuti, C-O-U-T-E-E. Hutton has actually witnessed him.
Well, I remember reading about his East-West game over the last few weeks.
Somebody will love that
guy. I didn't watch
guy.
The East-West game.
Somebody will love that guy because they'll think we get the ball in his hands and he's going to do some damage.